From Inside Higher Ed, this is This Week at Inside Higher Ed, the informed and essential conversation about the week's news in higher education. This Week is made possible through the generous support of our sponsors, ACT, Barnes & Noble College, Intel Corporation, Lumina Foundation, Oracle, and 2U.
Greetings from This Week at Inside Higher Ed. Our program today will focus on the announcement from Sweetbriar College this week that it will close at the end of the current academic year, and what the closure announcement says about the enrollment and financial challenges that confront other small colleges. Hi, I'm Casey Green, and I'm the moderator for This Week at Inside Higher Ed, where we go behind and beyond the news to provide the informative and engaging conversation about what really matters in higher education. So we welcome all, and ahead of our conversation today, please note you can post your thoughts about these conversations on the comments section of the This Week page, insidehighered.com/thisweek. So again, today our program focuses on the announcement regarding the closing of Sweetbriar College. This week, Sweetbriar College, a 114-year-old women's liberal arts college in Virginia, announced that it would close at the end of the current academic year. The announcement sent shockwaves through parts of American higher education. Although enrollments had declined, the college still had a significant endowment for a small college, was not confronting disciplinary action from its accreditor, was not facing the loss of eligibility for student federal financial aid programs, and had not declared financial exigency, the usual signals that precede a closing announcement. Yet 9 months after the arrival of a new president, the Sweetbriar board announced plans to close the college, citing the long-term challenges of sustaining a women's liberal arts colleges, the declining student interest in the liberal arts, and the competitive disadvantage of the college's location in rural Virginia. Joining us are James Jeff Jones, who is the president of Sweetbriar College, and Doug Letterman, the co-founder and co-editor of Inside Higher Ed. President Jones, we are most appreciative that you would join us. We know this has been a difficult time for you and your colleagues and your students at the college. Let me begin by asking the question about difficult versus dire. By the usual metrics and the usual signals of a college that's in trouble, there was not much of that, at least to external observers, at Sweetbriar. Again, no financial statement of exigency, you were not in trouble with your accreditor, and yet we get an announcement this week that the college will close at the end of the current academic year.
The facts over a long term are demonstrable. Sweetbriar, like many single-sex educational institutions in the country for a very long time, has had declining enrollments. The goals here over years have been to have classes at 200, and we have had classes at 160, 152, 1 year 128. And in that group, for every dollar comes in on tuition, we have been having to spend 62 cents in financial aid. That is a slope from which there's no recourse, because the amount of money that it takes to bring in the class massively depletes the amount of money that's left from every tuition dollar to operate the institution. Of the endowment, we have only $84 million, of which $56 million is severely restricted by donor covenants. So the board of directors had to review in great detail a massive amount of information during its board meeting on the 26th, 27th, and 28th of February. And in the resolution that the board adopted, the board states that a state of financial exigency exists at the college, and I informed the faculty, staff, and students of that unalterable fact on March the 3rd.
Doug, just in terms of context, I want to come back to President Jones's statement about the discount rate, the 62 cents on every dollar in tuition. How widespread is that for similar types of institutions?
Well, that's what's really interesting. Oh, Dr. Jones, I'm sorry. Let me just quickly answer that. There are lots of schools that sort of surprising numbers that have discount rates well into the 50s and even into the 60s. We have presidents coming through here all the time that when we ask, they don't tend to volunteer, but when we ask, we'll often acknowledge that their rates are that high. And there are consultants out there that insist that you can make that work for a while. Obviously, from Sweetbriar's perspective, that was unsustainable. The question is, you know, is for how long?
The school that can sustain a tuition discount rate that high are the ones with the massive endowments. In the single-sex world, that would be Wellesley with $1.8 billion, Smith North of $1.6 billion, Mount Holyoke, and Bryn Mawr. They've got the endowments to spin off the amount of financial aid that one would need in order to sustain a tuition discount rate that high. Sweetbriar, simply, you can't do that with $84 million, of which 56 is severely restricted. It's just, the algorithm won't compute.
Dr. Jones, I'm somewhat obligated to ask about the timing of this announcement. I went back and looked at the announcement regarding your appointment as president of the college last June. That seemed to brim with optimism about your appointment, your prior experience, the fact that your wife was an alumna of the college. There was nothing in there that signaled or suggested you were being brought in to do an assessment about the college's future, but in terms of A or nay, but just to take the college forward. And yet, 9 months after the arrival, as you mentioned a few moments ago, board meeting at the end of February, all the data, all the evidence, all the financials suggested this is a, you know, there was a dire future ahead. Could you talk a little, was it the case that there was a surprise after you arrived, or in fact, had some of this been part of the conversation going in?
I knew when the board asked me to consider taking this on, from a review of all of the vectors, that the college was skating on very thin financial ice. I discussed that with the search committee. My predecessor here, President Joellen Parker, had been talking about the fragile state, which is a term she used on any number of occasions, of the financials here. Did I think that all of the elements would come together so quickly? No, but I took office on the 15th of August. And when the class matriculated for the fall of 2014, the discount rate, yes, had fallen, but it had fallen from 63 cents to 62 cents. And the other fact from which one cannot flee is that the way the college has been able to balance the books for a very long time has been by having additional draws on the unrestricted endowment. And so as that trend line goes out, the restricted endowment gets smaller and smaller and smaller, the discount rate remains immensely high, and we are admitting one woman will matriculate as a student for every five women who are admitted to the college. These vectors, there's no way in the world you can play those vectors out to financial sustainability. They just won't work.
Understandably. Let me come back to Doug Letterman and some of the conversation about endowment and the huge difference between the endowment at Sweetbriar and some of the other institutions that you cited, Dr. Jones. Doug, you wanted to come back to that issue as well.
Sure. Dr. Jones, you described the Sweetbriar's endowment as being not huge, and certainly it's compared to some of the institutions you mentioned, it's not. But it was also in the midpoint of Nakubo's annual endowment survey, the Business Officers Group's annual
right.
endowment
right.
survey. And so there are obviously a lot of institutions. A lot has been made about the in a lot of the coverage about the endowment as a signal that surprising people that maybe Sweetbriar wasn't in as bad shape as. So what are the right, and you've explained a little bit why the endowment figure may be a little misleading, but so what are the right figures, the right metrics for the right data points for people to be looking at? What were the ones that were most important in making the case to you that the college's model was unsustainable, and as others around the country are looking at their own figures, what are the right figures for to judge what's a vulnerable institution these days? If not endowment.
That's a terribly complicated matter. It depends a lot on the size of the student body, the size of any deferred maintenance on the campus, and it also revolves around how much of the endowment is restricted. Presidents are always begging for unrestricted dollars because unrestricted dollars are fungible. They can be used to fix a roof leak or to increase financial aid. But the trend in philanthropy, at least by the case studies, which I'm sure you know, have shown us over the years that donors now are far more prone to want to give money to restricted causes rather than unrestricted causes. So it's not the size of the endowment, it's the size of the endowment per student minus the percentage of the endowment that is restricted. That's the figure. That's why the Nakubo figures are misleading to a certain degree, because if they said endowment is X amount of money, like Trinity, like Sweetbriar, if the line said Sweetbriar College, $84 million, of which $56 million is severely restricted, the difference at what should be a 5% payout, which is the safe figure, would be the data that presidents would mostly want to compare. And that's a terribly complicated issue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. President Joseph, a number of commentators have said this is a very courageous decision. Others have suggested, some anonymously, some putting their names on it, that in fact there were other things the college could have done to reinvent itself programmatically in terms of other student populations. How many options did you and your colleagues consider? What were some of the options you considered as you looked at the enrollment and financial issues confronting the college?
We hired Art and Science to do a great deal of marketing survey work. That was one important move. We looked very carefully at our donor base to see if there was enough philanthropy out there to come up with $10 to $12 million a year to go against the operating budget until such time as we might be able to get the endowment to $250 million, and there's just no appetite there. So we looked at every possible option. We looked at mergers. We looked at cooperative initiatives with other schools. We looked at all manner of programmatic changes here. We looked at coeducation, which the school has looked at now for the last at least three strategic plans. We looked at other institutions simply coming to Sweetbriar and absorbing this beautiful campus and all of its positive attributes. And we worked incredibly hard from about August the 25th or thereabouts, probably 10 days after I took office, until the last of January. And at that point, all the options simply disappeared. We hear all the time that we should have examined all possible options. We examined every possible option that anybody could possibly have thought of. And sadly, none of them could be put into effect in order to save what was facing us, which was this looming financial iceberg inches before the ship of state.
Comment from Doug Letterman?
It's fascinating. I guess, Dr. Jones, there's a in terms of the reaction, there's been a sense, as Casey said, there are quite a few people who sort of think that what Sweetbriar did here was unusual and sort of praiseworthy because of institutions that out there that tend to go to the very end. We quoted the president of Augustana College in our story this morning saying, we're going to spend, it's not irresponsible to say, quote, we're going to spend the last dollar before we close. You obviously, Sweetbriar's administrators and leaders and trustees decided that wasn't the right approach. How many, do you think it is too many institutions wait too long to make this kind of a decision?
Here's what I've told the scores of presidents and trustees elsewhere who contacted me this week. I think all of American higher education at this point is in a state of immense flux, the likes of which we may have never seen, including what happened during the Depression and then the vast expansion of American higher education with the GI Bill, those two being historic points of immense change. But neither of those, in my opinion, as somebody who's been running schools for 20 years, none of those previous historic phenomena are going to match what's going to happen to American higher education. I think we're in the first days of really serious changes, the likes of which we may not even be able to foresee. What the board did here, in my opinion, was to protect the students by giving us enough time to find places for them and to do the right thing by the faculty and the staff rather than what my colleague president at Augustana said by spending the last dime and then turning the lights out. We simply didn't think that was the moral thing to do, and I will always defend what the board did here because I think based on just simple ethics, they did the right thing.
So President Jones, to that end, you know, how do you close a college? I noticed that you now have a transitions page on the college's website with segments for students, for parents, for faculty, for others. You know, there are the student questions about where they go at the end of the academic year. You have several hundred faculty and other employees, some of who are local. You are a significant economic presence in the town. There's no cookbook that I'm aware of yet. And given what you suggest about what confronts higher education, there may need to be one in terms of college closings. But how do you do this?
Well, the first thing you do is get Elizabeth Brown's document that she wrote and read it very carefully, which I have done several times. There's no primer on this other than Elizabeth's wonderful document. But I think the main thing is to surround yourself with people who are going to be able to think about doing the responsible thing by each constituency, starting with the students, place them in schools. We've got, I don't know what the list is. Yesterday it was 77. The list just gets bigger and bigger this morning. I had two more emails from my colleague presidents offering help. I think we've got a very good plan in place to take care of the young women who are the reason the college exists. And that planning is going far better than I would have ever thought 3 days after we announced closure. So that part I feel really good about. Placing faculty and staff will be a challenge because of the state of American higher education right now, but we are going to do every single thing we can to help these devoted people because they are the core reason why the students get the incredible education that they do here. So we're trying to do the ethical thing and not running the school until we have to turn off the lights gives us at least some time between now and June the 30th to make every effort that we conceivably can make.
Great. James Jones, president of Sweetbriar College, thank you for joining us for the conversation and for providing some background information about the decisions that ultimately led to the announcement this week about the decision to close Sweetbriar College at the end of the academic year. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
In our second segment today, we continue the conversation about Sweetbriar College and what the closure decision means for other small colleges across the United States. Joining us are Alice Brown, president emeritus of the Appalachian College Association, Elizabeth Keesh is the president of Agnes Scott College and also president of the Women's College Coalition, and Doug Letterman, who is the co-founder and co-editor of Inside Higher Ed. Elizabeth Kiss, let me begin with you and come back to the same question I asked President Jones. You know, was it a difficult situation or is it a dire situation? Again, to the external observer, none of the usual signals of dire were out there. The college had not been sanctioned by its accreditor, had not declared financial exigency. A lot of people have offered a lot of comments, both pro and con, in terms of the decision. Your thoughts?
Sure. Well, you know, I hate to, my heart goes out to everybody at Sweetbriar, and of course it's very difficult as an outsider to fully understand the situation that they were facing. And I certainly get the sense that they're trying to do the right thing. However, I would say that they, you know, clearly faced a difficult situation. But I would take some issue with President Jones in suggesting that this suggests a kind of death knell for women's colleges overall. So they faced a difficult situation. They clearly looked at a lot of options. I'm not in a position to know whether they might have had other options, but other women's colleges are pursuing a lot of other options.
And Alice Brown, Dr. Brown, as president of the Appalachian College Association, president emeritus, you know, your association had a number of small colleges, some single sex perhaps, certainly very small, rural, like Sweetbriar, that confronted similar kinds of issues about enrollment and finances. You know, what's the lesson from the Sweetbriar experience?
Well, the sad thing that about dealing with these questions is that every college has a unique situation. For example, he talked about Starbucks being 30 miles away. Alice Lloyd College in Pippa Passes, Kentucky probably is 30 miles from the closest hotel or motel. But that college is really critical to that region because there aren't any other schools nearby that are like liberal arts. And the kids in that region tend to go close to home. And even if they live on campus and so every school has a situation that needs to be considered independent of all these standard criteria for success. You know, one thing that has saved Alice Lloyd is a policy of never borrowing money, and I can't imagine how many schools have adhered to that policy. So, as I said, it's really difficult to pinpoint specifically what you need to look at and how it needs to be played into the situation. And, you know, a lot of schools live a lot more frugally than Smith, but Smith couldn't live more frugally and attract the participants that they had.
Dr. Kiss, let me turn to you in the context of your role as president of the Women's College Coalition. Many women's colleges for a long time have lived on the edge. Going co-ed was a solution for some, not necessarily for others. Some have turned to a new emphasis on STEM education, on the sciences for women. Talk with us for a little bit, if you would, about some of the strategies that women's colleges are pursuing to remain solvent and remain viable.
Absolutely. You know, we recently did a study of 42 women's colleges in the U.S., and the trends over the past 10 years are actually pretty good. You know, there's a very modest drop in enrollments of about 3%, but the number of degrees awarded is up. Retention and yield are both higher than for women in co-ed schools. And I think what that shows is that, you know, many women's colleges, including some without those enormous endowments that that President Jones referenced, are doing well, and they're doing it through adaptation and innovation. So some of the things women's colleges are doing include diversifying their resources and programs. That's certainly something Mary Baldwin in Virginia has done for years. They're figuring out how they can provide address the needs in their own region. Here at Agnes Scott, we're launching an initiative that's focused on global learning and leadership development. There's a whole range of adaptations and innovations that women's colleges are doing and figuring out ways to make their mission relevant to the 21st century.
And Doug Letterman from Inside Higher Ed, let me turn to you as our resident journalist, if you will, both for women's colleges and small colleges, trying to adapt, trying to survive given financial and enrollment challenges. What are you seeing across the landscape?
Well, again, I think this is definitely more than a women's college issue. It's definitely more than a rural college issue. One of Sweetbriar's difficulties, certainly in their view, was that they had sort of the worst of all worlds in terms of being rural and feeling like the women's college mission was hampering them and being really, really small. So they sort of felt like they had sort of a triple whammy. The sort of macro question for liberal arts colleges generally is, you know, is demand for a liberal arts college education declining? And if so, is that a permanent decline, or is it economics related? Is it, there's certainly a major effort to try to reaffirm and in some ways, alter, but make the case more strongly for why a liberal arts education matters, and I think that campaign is I think it is likely to have some impact over time. But right now, we're certainly seeing demand for the institutions fade a little bit, and or at least ease or ebb. And I think that there are a lot of institutions out there that are struggling. And I sort of hate to say this out loud, but this may well be a situation where it may be that some institutions will die so that others might live. And I think that in an era of constrained interest, that's some of what we may be happening. I think the really interesting question is sort of how there are certainly, we have seen lots of evidence out there of institutions staying past their probably their best expiration date, and arguably not serving their students well. And again, Alice has written quite a bit about that in the past. The question of sort of when it is the appropriate time. Sweetbriar obviously made a very different decision here and pulled the plug earlier than some people thought it should have, but I think the alternative of places hanging on too long and providing a declining quality of education over time, I think is not very desirable either.
President Keech, I want to come back to the issue of liberal arts colleges, though. We've heard the death knell for liberal arts colleges for a long time. I'm old enough to remember some of the predictions about the demise of colleges during the enrollment crisis of the early 1980s, when there was an anonymous analyst who was widely quoted saying some 700 liberal arts colleges would close. That turned out not to be the case. We've seen the ebb and flow of liberal arts colleges, or at least the public conversation about it, during the economic downturns, most recently during the economic downturn we're crawling out of right now. And yet many survive. Many of the small colleges survive, and yet, you know, based on the comments we heard from President Jones in the prior segment, he and others, Doug perhaps as well, based on his comments a few moments ago, suggest that this time it's different. It's different for liberal arts colleges, and it's different for small colleges. Is that a fair assessment? Are we going to see a lot of colleges close?
Well, I'm not sure if we're going to see a lot of colleges close. These are, of course, very difficult times, both in private and public higher ed. But I agree with you that the criticism of the liberal arts, or the prediction that the end is near for the liberal arts, is something that has ebbed and flowed for many, many years in the United States. And what it points to is that in tough economic times, it can be a harder sell to explain the value of a liberal arts education. I actually think liberal arts colleges are getting better and better at making that case and at adapting in ways that make it clearer to students and their parents why getting a liberal arts education prepares you for a dynamic, you know, 21st century economy. And so it's, you know, I think liberal arts colleges will survive and thrive. I think they're actually at the cutting edge of innovation. But we do have to make the case.
Alice Brown, I want to turn to you on this. In the prior segment, President Jones referenced a document you had written that effectively becomes the closest thing we have to a cookbook for closing a college. You've written that, in fact, it's very difficult to close, some might say kill a college. And again, you know, there's some part of the commentary about the Sweetbriar circumstances that gives the president and the board credit for doing it earlier rather than later, to Doug Letterman's point about past the expiration date. How do you close a college? How do you kill a college? How do you stand up and say it's time? We have served our purpose, and it's time to sort of say we are at our expiration date, if you will.
Well, the sad thing to me is that so many colleges don't do that, and that the sad thing to me is that the colleges that have closed, I think, with great courage, before they were at the last dollar, in contrast, the ones who have stayed open, and my books are really more about colleges that managed to stay open somehow, the colleges, I think, that have stayed open in many cases have lessened their quality significantly in order just to stay open. And I think that's sad. And the future of liberal arts colleges, I'm not so sure, is as bright as Dr. Keith thinks they are, but I'm not in that field, so I don't really know. The colleges that I worked with, you know, one of the favorite sayings of a college just before it was forced to close by accreditation was, we've had tough times in the past and we got through those, we'll get through these tough times. And the very next day, Sachs notified them that they weren't going to be allowed to continue their accreditation anymore. And Sue Bennett, for example, closed in the middle of a semester, or would have had to close in the middle of a semester if somebody hadn't come along and given them enough money to finish paying the faculty for that one semester. So, closing without thinking about it very seriously, without admitting that it's a possibility and looking at how you might do it, is really, I think, risky. And the one example, there were so many similarities in the closing of Sweetbriar and the closing of St. Mary's in Raleigh, North Carolina, that I had to wonder if maybe people at Sweetbriar didn't read that. Maybe they did read that chapter, because one of the things that was said there by that president was they closed, when they closed, they closed. There was not a chance for people to rise up in arms and so forth like they did at Wilson College or Randolph. They made a decision and they announced it the same day to the students, the faculty, the media, the alums, and it was sort of done, and they didn't have to deal with the protests and so forth and so on. But they had been looking at that for many years. The president, who had been there about 10 years, said he knew within 6 months of coming there that they had a dire future ahead of them. Now, the good thing for St. Mary's is they had a girls' school that was still going on there, and they could sort of switch a lot of the faculty over to that. But nevertheless, it was a serious issue in discussions and so forth. But, you know, as I said, the sad thing to me is the schools that found ways to survive, I think, just prolonged what was inevitable. You know, for example, colleges that merged with another college thinking they would maintain their distinctive nature and their name, many of those don't have much of a distinctive presence on the campus they merged with. A number of campuses that merged ended up, the campus that took them under their wing sold the property and sort of gave them a corner on a campus. So I don't know that the solutions to not closing are really good. And I'm one of the people that admires a college that looks at the data and does close with some money in hand, like Wilson College tried to do, to help the faculty, to help the students, to preserve something of the facility and the traditions. For example, Wilson wanted to have they wanted to form a foundation and have scholarships for other young women to go to other colleges, women's colleges. So it's a difficult choice, but I just admire the people at Sweetbriar for spending the time and energy and committing money to study the situation instead of committing money to try to increase enrollment, increase giving, increase whatever, to look at what the possibilities really were.
Doug Letterman, is this time really different? It seems that every time, again, during demographic shifts and economic downturns, there's the conversation about colleges are going to close, and ultimately very few do, and they are those that have had a long history of financial difficulty and enrollment difficulty. Again, you know, many folks, just as Alice did a few moments ago, lauded the folks at Sweetbriar for being courageous for doing this early, reflecting the statement of the board chair about a moral obligation to do this early and do this appropriately. Again, is this time and is this cycle different? Will we see a number of small private colleges close in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I agree with President Keish that the predictions of sort of massive closure of colleges are overstated. I do think this time is different though, and I think if we've averaged, I don't know, 5 to 8 institutions a year closing, I think we could see that double or even triple, so that we'd be talking about 15 or, and that's serious, and every one of these colleges, as the people at Sweetbriar acknowledge, and as everybody else on this call has acknowledged, it's a big deal, and it's painful for communities, it's painful for employees, it's painful for students. But I do think that there are, I do think this time is different for, I think the history, there's no question that it's cyclical. And I do believe, that the power of liberal arts college and the colleges and the liberal arts education, I think people will rediscover that at some point. Of course, I'm also somebody who believes that people will rediscover the importance of journalism. So, maybe I'm overly hopeful, but I do think that will happen. But I think that in the meantime, the other thing that differentiates this maybe from the past times, is technology and sort of I think that's a factor that wasn't around in quite the same way in the past as it is now. And I think the combination of factors will mean more institutions struggle, because there are more alternatives. I guess bottom line for me is it's going to be, the places that are in danger are those that are undifferentiated, and there are, I think, a lot of institutions out there that have a difficult time proving that they have a niche. Now, interestingly, Sweetbriar arguably did. It was but I'm not sure it's a niche that was in enough demand, because it was, I don't know how many equestrian heavy colleges can survive, and the rural nature, I think, may have been a bigger factor here than anything else. But I do think this time is a little different. But again, I agree with the others that the suggestions that we're going to see hundreds of colleges close is exaggerated.
Dr. Brown and Dr. Kiesch, let me give you each a closing comment. What happens going forward in your conversations after today with your colleagues about the Sweetbriar situation and the future of small colleges? What do you take away from the Sweetbriar experience? Dr. Kiesch?
Well, I agree with Doug that this is a wake-up call for colleges, and that differentiating ourselves in ways that are market relevant is going to be very important for liberal arts colleges, for women's colleges, figuring out what is the way in which we can make ourselves relevant and strong. So I think it's going to lead to strategic conversations and hopefully even more innovation and adaptation. I'm seeing a lot of that already in the sector, but even more among small colleges all across the country.
Dr. Brown, your thoughts?
Well, I just want to close with a thought that it's not all that pleasant, but it's something that the people at Sweetbriar will, I'm sure, find out. One of the presidents that closed the college quite well, I think, said, I think I put it in the book, just know that the bitterness won't end until the last alum dies.
So noted. All right. Thank you. Alice Brown, from President Emeritus of the Appalachian College Association, Elizabeth Kiesch, President of Agnes Scott, Doug Letterman from Inside Higher Ed. Our thanks as well to James Jones, the president of Sweetbriar College, for joining us for the opening segment. This Week at Inside Higher Ed is available as an audio stream or podcast early afternoon on most Fridays. On the web, we are available at insidehighered.com/thisweek. This Week is also available on iTunes. Please share your thoughts about This Week with us on the comments section of the webpage. Thank you.
Join us for the next edition of This Week at Inside Higher Ed. Funding for This Week is provided by 2U, ACT, Barnes & Noble College, Intel Corporation, Lumina Foundation, and Oracle. This Week at Inside Higher Ed is a production of G2 Education. Executive producer is Ginny Goldstein. Technical support is provided by Learning Times.